Ovemetzia daf kaf bet amud bet perspectives tiyufta derova tiyufta, where we're going to be looking more at the method of the approach. We're going to be looking at a Gemara that is a little bit problematic, and a Rif that we need to understand. I've often mentioned to you the Rif really summarizes the Gemara. He just brings the Gemara. He brings very little of his own. Sometimes he does, but very little. It's mostly picking out the halachic parts of the Gemara, leaving out anything that isn't halachically relevant. And a lot of what we learn in the Rif to understand the Rif's innovation is from what the Rif leaves out. And the Rif leaves out something in today's Gemara. And understanding why he leaves it out is what's going to be important. And the Matmon really lies not so much in the content of what we're learning as in the methodology of the way the Gemara reasons this through, of how the Rishonim understand the Rif. And through that, we'll understand one of the ways that we make sure in our tradition, in our wonderful religion, in Torah, that as strong as the Masorah is, we are so strict on Masorah, on tradition, on where does it come from, what's the authority, what's the origin, what avoids it becoming dogmatic? What avoids us becoming fossilized? If everything's Masorah, then are we supposed to live in the 21st century in Ra'anana or in New York or in Yerushalayim or in London the way they lived in Warsaw or in Kelm or in Telz? Are we supposed to live exactly the same way because that's our Masorah? And where before that? And if we're Sephardi people, do we need to live the way we lived in Fez or the way we lived in Tayman? What stops us becoming fossilized? What allows us to move and to adapt and to be agile and yet to stay all the time within the tradition? We'll see some of that methodology in the way this Gemara unpacks. So I'm not going to do a lot of focusing on the content, although it's beautiful, and I've often thought whether we should reinstitute the idea of once a week after davening, if there are enough people interested to do the matmon. We can do the same day as matmon, to go over it, but with the proper text and go over it carefully and slowly and actually reason it out. So you'll let me know if there are enough people who want to stay behind once a week, we'll do that. Because the Gemara itself and the Rif is just so wonderful, and we won't have a chance to go deeply into it. So it starts with the posuk that we had 2 days ago, two daf ago, that we've got to return lost property. And the phrase that we focus on in this posuk in Kitetze is Asher Tovad Mimeno O Metzata. This applies the Chiyuv Hashava. So in the case of Aveda, we've got an interesting situation. It's not the same as Zechiyah Min Ahefke. If there's something which is ownerless, anybody can pick it up, can make it theirs. The problem with an Aveda, with something that he's lost, is it's not ownerless. It's just that the owner can't find it. He has no shlita over it. It's not in his reshut, as we've discussed. He doesn't have authority over it, but he still has ownership. How can you pick it up and how can it become yours? This is part of what this Perek deals with. The Torah says this obligation to return, which is what stops it becoming yours. If it were pure hefker, you can pick it up and it's yours. You don't have an obligation to give it to anybody. It's ownerless. But this is not ownerless. There was an owner, and in some cases there is still an owner, and there's a chiyuv hashava. You're obligated to track the owner down and return it to the owner. But that obligation to return it to the owner is asher tovad mimenu umetzata, when it's been lost from him and somebody else finds it. And that leads our Gemara into a conclusion in the machloket, in the difference of opinion between Abaya and Rava on Daf Chof Aleph that we've had, whether Yeush Shelo Midat is Yeush or isn't Yeush. That means a person doesn't yet know that he's lost his gold Rolex. But when he finds out that he's lost his gold Rolex, he's going to have no hope of getting it back. So objectively, we know this is a hopeless situation for the owner. The owner himself, subjectively, he hasn't yet experienced the hopelessness. Do we need him to experience the hopelessness, or is it enough if we know that it's hopeless? That's the machlokes Abaya v'Rava. And Abaya says, lo havi yeyush? It's not here. You need him to experience the yeyush, otherwise it's not good. And Rava says, no, conceptually, if we understand this is a hopeless situation, then it's good. And I'm sure that yesterday you discussed, Ilan, our old understanding of Abaya and Rava that we had in Kiddushin and in Gittin, based on the Ayin Ayo of Rav Kook. Rava is straightforward in looking at the facts, and Abaya usually is willing to look at things a little bit further afield. And here it's the opposite way around. Abaya says, this is not Yeush. He didn't experience it. He hasn't given up hope. Rava says, but look at it more broadly. They kind of flip positions here. And we did discuss it when we did the Gemara in Gittin and in Kiddushin. So the Gemara then goes on to say, we're not talking about where there's a siman. If his initial is engraved in the back of his golden Rolex, that's not an issue. He's not going to give up hope there. We're talking about a case where there is a siman. The Kipligi Bedovash Embo siman, where there's no sign. It's an unmarked golden Rolex, brand new out of the box. There's no way that you can tell who this belonged to before. And there we have Abaye and Rava arguing. And the Gemara brings a proof on our daf from a braisa that Rabbi Yochanan brings in the name of Rabbi Shmuel ben Yehotzadak. It's not Rabbi Shmuel ben Yehotzadak, as we'll see in the riff. It's Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak, who was Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe. And he was at the end of the Tanaic period. So this is actually a braisa. The scholars want to argue that perhaps he's really the first of the Amoraim. He's already in the Amoraic period. But we see from the Rishonim on this sugya that the Rishonim certainly treat him as a Tana, not as an Amora, which means his statement is a braisa. It's almost as powerful as a Mishnah. So Rabbi Yochanan quotes the statement of his Rebbe, a Tana, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak. And he brings the whole situation of a river washes the golden Rolex away in such a situation. And he goes through backwards and forwards, figuring it out. And then he has the following words. V'isura dumya dehetera. And in this law that we're talking about, when a river washes it away, isur and heter are the same. What is isur and heter? So a situation where you're not allowed to pick it up because the owner has not done yeush yet. Or you are allowed to pick it up because the owner has done yeush. There's no difference in treating them. Ma hetera ben deit basimun aven delet basimun shara afisura ben deit basimun aven delet basimun asura. You see from here that the siman is irrelevant. Whether the watch is engraved or not is irrelevant. If there has not been explicit experience of yeush, if the owner has not experienced hopelessness, then you can't take it home. It doesn't belong to you. You've got to return it. If the owner has experienced hopelessness, you can, which means yeush shelo midat. If the owner has not experienced hopelessness, it's lo havi yeush. It's not yeush, which is like Abaye against Rava. Says the Gemara, tiyufta de Rava tiyufta. That's a valid challenge to Rava. That destroys Rava. Then the Gemara says, "V'hilchas akavatzid Abaye," and the halacha is like Abaye. Well, of course, we've just destroyed Rava. No, says the Gemara, not for that reason. But Beyal Kagam, we've learned that there are six cases where we paskin like Abaye against Rava. In all other cases, we paskin like Rava against Abaye. This is one of the six. So the first question is, why do we need Yael Kagam? We've just destroyed Rava. We've brought a tiyufta. We've brought a proof from a braisa against Rava. Why do you need to come onto Yael Kagam? Of course, the halach is like Abaye. That's the first question. And it's possibly for that reason that the Baal Amor brings his Rebbe. We've spoken about the Baal Amor on the Rif from Provence. The Baal Amor's Rebbe was Rabbi Avrohom Av Beis Din, he's called. He's known as the Ravid Hasheni. He was the Rebbe of the Ravid Hashlishi. The Ravid Hashlishi is the person we know as the Ravid. He writes on the Rambam. He was a Talmud of this Rabbi Avrohom Av Beis Din. And also the Baal Amor was a Talmid. So the Baal Amor and the Ravid are friends, chavruses, learning together from Rabbi Avrohom Av Beis Din. Rabbi Avrohom Av Beis Din, their Rebbe, says, "Ha tiyuvta lo nehirali." I don't get this question. This is the Gemara says, it's amazing. Even Rishonim, sometimes have a piece of Gemara and they say, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Can't make sense of it. I don't get this tiyuvta. That's interesting. Why doesn't he get the tiyuvta? Because you're asking on Rava from a deduction that you make out of a braisa. The braisa talked about the river washes the Rolex away, there's no siman on there, and you make a deduction, v'yisurike, etera, and so you can't make a deduction and argue against Rava because of that. That's not a valid, that's not a tiyuvta, it's a question maybe. But tiyuvta means a challenging, a decisive challenge to Rava. That's not a decisive challenge, is what the Rav Av Beis Din says. So, for that reason, possibly, the Rif leaves it out altogether. The Rif doesn't mention the tiyuvta. As I said to you, we're going to notice. And the Rif, something he leaves out and learn from the omission. So he leaves it out and he just says, V'hilchata kavata d'abaya b'yael kagam v'hochada minayu. We know that halachas like Abaya in these six cases. And this is one of the six cases. He just ignores the tiyuvta. Why does he ignore the Tiyuvta? Well, the Harav Avrom Av Beis Din, when he was teaching that Rif, said, our Rebbe, the Rif, left it out because it's not a very good Tiyuvta. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So that would also answer why, once you've got a Tiyuvta, do you still need Yael Kagam? Well, the Rav Avrom Av Beis Din says it isn't really a Tiyuvta. This is not, well, and the Rif leaves it out altogether. That's why we need Yael Kagam. But our Gemara still has the Tiyuvta. What do we do with the Tiyuvta? It's still there. So you remember that Tzalach learned that this is where we learn Yael Kagam from. The fact that Rava is dismissed in our sugya sets in motion a domino effect of the other six cases. That was the Tzlach in Sanhedrin Daf Chav Zayin. The Tzlach said that it sets in motion a domino effect. Once you understand that in this Rava is cast aside, he must be cast aside in the other five cases of Yael Kagam as well. So clearly, according to the Tzlach, the Tiyuvta is key. Without the Tiyuvta, without the challenge to Rova, we wouldn't have Yael Kagam. The whole of Yael Kagam, these six cases where we decide in favor of Abaye, are founded on the fact that we challenge Rova in our particular sugya. So clearly the Tzlach understands there is a Tiyuvta. We've just learned the Rif leaves the Tiyuvta out. The Rav Avrom Av Beis Din says, I don't understand what the Tiyuvta is. And according to the Tzlach, the Tiyuvta is the foundation of Yael Kagam. So our Gemara would be saying, yes, there's a Tiyuvta, the Rava Tiyuvta. There's a decisive question on Rava. And therefore, Hilchata Kavata Dabaya be Yael Kagam. That's how the Tzlach would understand the Gemara. And therefore, in all cases of Yael Kagam, we go like Abaya against Rava. But what do we do with Rav Avrom Av Beis Din? So we have the Baal HaMor. The Baal HaMor is one of the Talmidim of Rav Avrom Av Beis Din. And he says, I don't understand my Rebbe. I don't understand how he comes to that. And then he goes on to develop the understanding that this statement of V'isura Dumya Dehetera is not a deduction. Why did my Rebbe Rav Avrom Av Beis Din not understand the Tiyuvta? Because how can you ask a Tiyuvta from reasoning, extrapolation from a Braisa? Who says Rav extrapolates in that way? As Tosfos in fact says he doesn't. No, says the Baal HaMor, this was part of Rabbi Yochanan. The quotation marks end after this. Unquote. Tiyuvta derova tiyuvta. All of that is Rabbi Yochanan. So that's how Rabbi Yochanan understands the Braisa. Tiyuvta on Rava. Says the Ravid, but that, this is now the real Ravid. Who is the Baal HaMor's friend? Also learning their Rebbe, the Rav Avrom Av Beis Din. Says the Ravid, but that doesn't help. So now you're asking a question on Rava. From Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is not a Tanna, Rabbi Yochanan is an Amoira. Rava can disagree with Rabbi Yochanan. What kind of Tiyuvta is this? Again, you can have a question. Look how Rabbi Yochanan learns, how do you learn? And Tosfos tells us how Rava learns. There's another way to learn the Braisa. It doesn't help that you're saying it's all Rabbi Yochanan. It doesn't have the force of a Braisa. And if it doesn't have the force of a Braisa, how can you use it to undo Rava? Says the Ravid. So the Ravid and the Baal HaMor, two chavrusas, two friends, sitting in Provence, in the Beis HaMedrash of Rav Avrom Av Beis Din, have a different perspective on what their Rebbe, how to understand their Rebbe, how to learn, or how their Rebbe understood the Rif. According to the Baal HaMor, there isn't really a Tiyuvta at all. It's from Rabbi Yochanan. According to the Ravid, there is a Tiyuvta, and he goes on, he says, the Tiyuvta actually is from the Posuk itself. The way the Ravid learns is brilliant. And he says the question is really from the Posuk itself. Rabbi Yochanan learns the Braisa in such a way that the Posuk is clear. Rava, how will you explain the Posuk? From the Posuk, it's clear that there has to be an experience of Yeush. It's not sufficient to say we can estimate that this is a Yeush kind of situation. If there wasn't actually Yeush, if you didn't experience the hopelessness, you haven't, as we said the other day, you haven't gifted it, as Reb Shimon said. You've got to gift it to anybody who finds it. You're not going to gift it to somebody who finds it if you don't even know you've lost it. So clearly, if you look at the Posuk, it's clear that it's got to be like Abaya and not like Rava. That's how strong this question is. Now that you've got a Tiyuvta on Rava from a Posuk, because of Rava's worldview, we can say Yael Kagam, we're paskin like Abaya in all those situations. And Tosfos says, Rava has a different way of learning the Braisa. the Divrei Sholem, which is the Ne'el Amor, we've spoken to him before, Rabbi Aviel Orenstein, I told you, a relative of mine who lives in Yerushalayim in Telstone, and he learns the Baal Hamor and says that this is more than just a reasoning. Le Baal Hamor, the high lishna achen ena lishna de memra ela de mesoret haita biyadam. They had a tradition, shekach bi'er Rabbi Yochanan et Divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Yehotzadak, that this is how Rabbi Yochanan learnt the Braisa. So there's a strong tradition. From the tradition, we can ask, he says, but ain't kan tiyufta mamash. It's not a real challenging question. It's just Rova has to wiggle his way out now. Because Rabbi Yochanan has a clear way of understanding the Braisa, Rova's going to have to wiggle his way out, and Tosfos tells us how he wiggles his way out. And therefore, we paskin like Abaya, because why get into having to wiggle your way out when you can learn it simply the way Abaya learns it, the way Rabbi Yochanan understands the Braisa, and so we decided. So what do we have here? We have two different schools of thought. We have the Tzlach. Understand, the Tzlach only works according to the Ravid explaining the Rif, kind of. So the Ravid says there's a very strong question against Rava. It comes from the Posuk itself. Says the Tzlach, the question is so strong that it gives Abaya the status of being the decisor in five other cases as well that are connected in some way. That's how powerful it is. So that's one school of thought. The other school of thought is the school of the Baal Hamor, where the Baal Hamor says it's not a very strong question, and that's why maybe the Rif just leaves the Tiyufta out altogether. And Ya'el Kagam is a separate issue. So when we learned that Tzlach and was so brilliant, the idea that the Tiyufta triggers the Ya'el Kagam, that's only according to the way the Ravid understands the Rif and understands the whole sugya. That works according to the way the Baal Hamor understands the sugya. The Tiyufta is not such a serious Tiyufta. Ya'el Kagam is a stronger reason to Paskin Abaya than the challenge we bring against Rava. What's beautiful here as we look at it is we've got a Rif. The Rif simply quotes the Gemara, leaves a piece out. There are lots of ways to understand why he left it out. And he doesn't explain it anyway. He leaves that to later generations. Figure it out whichever way you want. And now we've got two, we've got Talmidim of the Rif. We've got the Rav Av Beis Din, who suggests a reason, because the Tiyufta is a weak Tiyufta. But he's not very clear. Why is it a weak Tiyufta? And why is it in the Gemara? He doesn't go into a whole lot of detail. He leaves it to later generations to figure out. And now you've got the Ravid and the Baal Hamor, two Talmidim of the Rav Avraham Av Beis Din, with two different worldviews as to what this all means and how to understand the Rif. And it's that fluidity that allows us to be relevant and allows us to stay relevant. If the Rif would have explained every word and every detail, well, if the Gemara would have explained every word and every detail, we wouldn't have an issue. If the Rif would have explained every word and every detail, we wouldn't have an issue. If the Rav Av Beis Din had explained exactly what he meant, we wouldn't have an issue. The Baal Hamor, so it goes right through the ages. Space is left for individual experts to interpret and to apply according to their worldviews, which is informed partially by the era in which they're living. That will obviously also inform it. We had that wonderful case the other day of Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan paskening that shaila for the woman who lost her money at the fair. Somebody finds it, they go to Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan. Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan's mechadesh, amazingly, that the husband is the owner of the money and he was never miyayish. The woman didn't have the right to be miyayish. And we learn from there, in Rabbi Yerucham's name, a wonderful principle. But I wonder to myself, if Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan were asked that question theoretically, would he have come up with the same innovation? Or did Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan say to himself, I've got to find a way to get this money back to the widow, to the wife, to this woman? It's not fair, it's not straight, it's not just. There must be a way. And Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan goes through the sugya and breaks his mind and works, he's got a way to do that. The empathy and the situation of the moment drives the chidush sometimes, drives the halachic innovation. That doesn't mean that one's flimsy and you just make decisions based on what's going on in the world around you. But what's going on in the world around you, if you're connected to the world around you and you have the tradition, you're able to marry the current and the present with the old, with that which is the tradition, with that which is the Messiah. And it's marrying the timelessness with the timeliness. That is the essence of halacha. If halacha is only timeless, it's irrelevant. If halacha is only timely, it's irrelevant. It's not halacha. The art of halacha, and we see how it's done in the Gemara, the art of halacha is to marry the timeliness of the era with the timeliness of halachic principle and come out with a decision that works both in terms of our tradition and in terms of the environment and situation in which we find ourselves.